Welcome back to Planet Waves FM's continuing coverage of the United Astrology Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. Actually, this is more coverage of the people at the United Astrology Conference. So far, more or less, we have left out the gamesmanship, the politics, the class materials, except as described by our presenters, and interestingly, a good few people who we've had on the program so far this week and this weekend have not been presenters. They have been just people who are participants at the conference who have not either applied or, you know, they're just not at that kind of level of involvement, but they've got something interesting to say, and that would count for our next guest, our current guest, Andrea Gertz. Welcome to Planet Waves FM.
Thank you for having me.
So I don't know much about you, but I do know that you're a translator of ancient Greek, and you've handed me a copy of the introduction to Ptolemy's Tetrabiblios.
Very true, yes.
And you've translated this yourself out of ancient Greek.
Yes, I have.
So that's pretty interesting. How did you start doing ancient Greek, or were you
sure.
born in ancient Greece?
Oh, gosh, I wish. No, what happened was I've worked as a sign language interpreter for many years, probably at this point, I don't know, 15 years professionally.
AGSL?
Yeah.
Ancient Greek Sign Language? Do they have that?
right. They will soon. No. But so I'd worked as an interpreter for many years and then also have worked as a practicing astrologer, actually doing many charts. And so when I went to Kepler College of Astrological Arts and Sciences, while I was there trying to learn the history of astrology, I found out about all the ancient texts that were needing to be translated. And because I've had the skills of being able to manage concept gaps and work between two different languages for many years as a sign language interpreter, I knew that I could write down the texts in a clear and readable way. So then I went to Portland State University to learn Greek and Latin, and then I just set out to translate the text. And at this point, I can read Greek fluently because having done Vettius Vallon's book one now, and he talks about all aspects of humanity, really. So I've learned. So at this point, I would say I'm fairly fluent. Of course, I still have to look things up in the dictionary, but that's how I got into it.
What's in your chart that to you reveals your gift for language? That's a pretty good gift to just learn Greek and Latin and be a sign language interpreter.
Yes. I have Saturn in the third house in Leo, exactly sextile my sun and ascendant. And
so you're born at sunrise?
Well, no, I'm a Libra sun, and I was born at 9 p.m., so I'm a Gemini rising, and I have the sun trine to that.
Ah.
And Saturn's in Leo in the third, so I have a nice trine sextile. And then Mercury's conjunct my sun also, so It gives a good, structured mind. And when I was 14, I learned American Sign Language, or I started, so I know it was when a Saturn period was going on. And then under my Saturn return, I was learning Greek and Latin, so I know Saturn's involved.
Is involved. What sign is Saturn in?
Leo.
In Leo. Right. And the third house, that's going to, well, that would dampen, in theory, or provide discipline.
Yes. Well, it definitely provides a lot of discipline. I know I didn't speak till I was three, and I know, and then I started. Apparently, my dad said he's an astrophysicist, and he told me that he would take me to count train. He would count trains, but that I didn't speak, and then all of a sudden I started counting at like 35, and I was right. I was counting the trains in my mind, and that's kind of how I've always been. Is I study very, deeply before I ever mention that I know something. But so that's the Saturn in the third. It's very deep study.
Yeah. And that the desire for preparation, I think being a little slow on the uptake is a very good thing for knowledge.
Yes. Well, yeah, I really want to learn all the foundation before I say much. Now, my Mercury is 2 degrees after my Saturn. So, you know, when Pluto was hitting my Saturn, I was doing a lot of deep study. And then, but when it started to hit my Mercury.
When Pluto?
Yeah. So.
From where?
So Pluto was at 28 Sagittarius.
Oh, trining.
Yeah, I was trining it. I also have Mars at 28 Cancer, so I'm a little bit about my studies. It's not just a flaccid kind of thing. Yeah. It's a deep study. It's not, so, I mean, it takes a lot of energy to really learn ancient Greek. I mean,
I would imagine.
It's the calculus of languages.
This is what I'm wondering. I mean, it's.
Yeah, it took a lot of work. I mean, I was basically in hibernation for 6 years doing this because I wanted the astrology community to sound intelligent. And Vettius Vallon was a clear writer, and he had a lot of interesting things to say. And so I wanted to be able to write it down in a way where people wouldn't stop reading it.
So. Right. To make it engaging.
Yeah. To honor the... To be faithful to the text itself. I mean, Vallon himself was engaging. If you have a text that's engaging, it should come out on the other side engaging.
In the translation,
yes. If the text is unclear, it's not the translator's job to make it clear. It's to be a humble servant to the text. That's at least my view.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're in this era where there's a lot of this translation going on. I'm sure you've heard of Project Hindsight.
Yes.
That starts about, I'm guessing it starts about 1894, maybe, was the first conference, mm-hmm. first conclave. Mm-hmm. And so there's a number of these books have appeared. Are you choosing texts to translate that have not been translated yet, or are you doing retranslations of...
Okay, that's a great question. What happened was I went to a conclave at Project Hindsight many years ago, and...
Which one? Ithaca?
No, Cumberland. Cumberland. So I went there in the hopes that I would find a community where I could really work with translation and all that. The problem I found was that because I'd worked as a sign language interpreter for many years, translation theory is something that I've worked with every day, and I have a deep knowledge of how to translate. So there's one thing. How do you read the text? Can you read it? Then it's how do you write it down? Now that's really the key to a good translation is how do you render it? How do you make a portrait that's an equivalent conceptual, you know, text. So anyway, I went to Project Hindsight, and I'm so glad for all their work because, you know, what I learned from them helped me to kind of go on and read Valance. Now, I made a point to not look at Mark Riley's translation or Robert Schmidt's translation much because I really wanted to look at the text and what the text was telling me that the text said. And so then anyways, back to your initial question. I set out to translate Valance because I knew that Valance was an interesting author. But what I'm working on now is a book by Porphyry on ensoulment. It's how the soul gets in the body. I mean, how does it get in the body? It's kind of an interesting question. But that's untranslated into English at this point, and that's what I'm really into now is getting on ensoulment. So.
What's he saying?
Well, one of the things, he talks a lot about the whole thing. I actually had to read that text in order to fully understand Valance because Valance says that the sun rules the aestheterion, which aesthetics, it's your aesthetic perception of the world is under the sun, but the aestheterion is like the soul senses machine. It's your head. It's how it, how we translate, you know, things through our sensory experience. Anyway, I didn't quite know what he was saying. What does he mean by that? Well, I get this text in my inbox by Porphyry, and he's talking all about aestheticase and the whole thing. So back.
Porphyry emailed you?
Well, actually, this guy named... Okay, there's a guy named... what is his name? Roger Pierce. And I found he was trying to commission someone to translate Porphyry of Tyre. And someone said, oh, this girl's translated already. So I emailed him and I said, Roger, do you need anything translated? And all of a sudden, I got in my inbox Ensoulment and by Porphyry. But it was...
A Greek copy.
A Greek copy, yeah. And it with coffee stains. Well, I don't know if they're coffee stains, but, there, you know, you could even see the original Greek.
Might
in the
be
back.
Tea or something.
Yeah,
but
right,
it's but the book, the scans of the book are stained and it's old.
Yeah.
Weather-beaten copy.
Yeah, and it was actually quite serendipitous because I was really struggling. What does Valance mean? Until I know what he means, I'm not going to write anything down. So, you know, what does he mean by the sun rules the aestheticase? What does that really mean? Well, after I read this book on ensoulment, which is all about the, here we get back to your initial question, your aestheticase, which is your aesthetic perception, and then Porphyry talks about the hormase, which is your urges, your temptations, your, think of hormones, right? We get probably hormones from this. But he's talking a lot.
H-O-R-M-E-Z.
Well, in Greek, it's going to be, I would say in English, I would phonetically render it as maybe H-O-R-M-E-S, but that's not the Greek word. Here, let me, what's the Greek word?
Hormone is, it's a new word, 1905, from Greek hormone, H-O-R-M-O-N, that which sets in motion.
Oh, interesting.
Part of horman, to impel or to urge on. From horm, onset, impulse, and then Indo-European, the Indo-European root is sma, or from the root ur, to move or set in motion.
Hmm.
Used by Hippocrates to denote a vital principle. Modern meaning coined by English psychologist Ernest Henry Starling, who died in 1927. Jung used horm in 1915 as a reference to hypothetical mental energy that drives unconscious activities and instinct.
Yes, so what Porphyry says is that we have aesthetic perception, meaning that I can see you interviewing me and I can feel this table, right? But the hormase is like the urges we incarnate into, and perhaps that's a chart. Because what he's saying is, you know, and then he's talking about the fantasia of the soul, the kind of theoretical thought form of the soul in this area, that's different from the place where it kind of comes down and congeals and gets its hormones. So he's talking a lot about the soul, then the kind of urges that are put upon the soul, which we might say is the chart. Then he's talking about sentient creatures, like plant creatures versus, you know, animal creatures. And so there's a lot of that going on. So a big discussion on the soul. Yeah, a lot to be said.
And what does it come down to?
Well, I'm really a lot of what I notice. I mean, I'm only so far into the text, right? I'm probably maybe 6 or 7 pages in of a, it's probably 25 pages. But so far he's talking just a lot about how plant creatures, there's a lot of concepts he's introducing. So it's hard to kind of sum it up in 2 minutes, but he's talking a lot about having control of oneself, being, you know, growing and increasing, how plants maintain control of themselves and gain that by growing and increasing in size and form, but then a sentient being like an animal has it. So he's doing a lot of comparing between sentient beings, like a creature, like you'd call it, he calls it a zdo'en, like an animal creature, a sentient creature, versus a plant creature, which is like futos, like photosynthesis, or fuo means to generate, like generated creatures.
So he's making an assumption that plants are not sentient.
Well, I can't say that categorically for sure because I haven't read the whole text. But
he seems to divide them apart and put animals into one category.
Enlivened creatures. And we get the words, you know, zodiac from this, right? And it's almost like the highway ecliptica, if we could call it, is a path of 12 creatures, right? And they're enlivened.
To a couple of humans.
Yeah, a few humans, a crab, you know, whatever, some sentient beings. So it's almost like where you incarnate through and turn sentient, perhaps. But yeah, all very interesting.
So you're digging this stuff out, and there definitely is a need for it. Yeah. In the centaur community, we've benefited greatly from the work of Dieter Cook, who's translated the centaur myths, which are old myths.
Are they from Greek?
They're Greek. Yeah, I don't think the centaurs made it into Roman mythology. I don't know of any equivalent names of any of the centaurs, so I think they're a strictly Greek, Greek kind of a thing, and they were basically forgotten until Chiron was discovered and Charles Kowal named Chiron, and then everyone went running back to the mythology. And then as more centaurs were discovered, Dieter Koch went and dug them out of ancient Greek, and so
I would love to read that. I haven't heard much about it, so I'm always trying to learn more about the cultural milieu at the time. Makes a better translator.
Yeah, Melanie Reinhart's the person to ask. She may have, you know, like I have, she's been someone who's benefited greatly from Dieter's work, because what we know about the centaurs, the consensus is that we know more than we'd know from academic translations. That they're more honest translations because the ambiguities are called out for what they are, and we're prompted to the ambiguities, as opposed to in another translation where they might not be. There might just be someone settles it in the process of the translation, and you don't even find out that there was a question.
Yeah, that's very true. It's interesting, being a sign language interpreter for many years, the question of how you translate that process to a written text. You know, in interpreting, let's say the teacher says something and I, as the interpreter, don't know what they mean, I might kind of turn my head to the side a little bit and let the deaf person know, like, I don't quite understand what he's saying. So how do I handle that in the text? Do I put that in the footnote? Do I put it in
a little emoticon?
Exactly.
The tip face and wrinkled brows.
Exactly. Yeah. No. I mean, yeah. It was almost like I had to. I actually, a lot of the people I consulted on my translations were the translations experts I know, other sign language interpreters. I would sit down with my friend Ed, and I'd say, Ed, all right, what do you think? Does this go in the cultural introduction? Does this go in the footnote? You know, because a lot of times, if you're really going to translate something, there's so many different ways of thinking 2,000 years ago that I had to write an introduction to the cosmology of the time, and just so that things in the translation make sense. The translation becomes like a whole piece, you know? It's But you sound like you know the nuances of it.
A little bit. I mean, I'm aware of them and how important they can be.
Yes.
And how much. So you're doing Porphyry. You're translating this one. And any what's your wish list?
Well, let's see. I'm actually about to publish two books that are my own words, so that's I wish that they would be done.
In ancient Greek?
No. They're in English. One's called Astrological Remediation, A Guide for the Modern Practitioner. Because as a practitioner of astrology, really what I do is try to heal any weird-ass thing in the chart. I don't know if I can see the A word on here. So if not, let's do a retroactive censor. But I will say that it was I don't want to say excruciating, but it took a long time to translate Valens and do it right. And then when it was done, and he's very fate-based, obviously, because he lived in the time period where that was the mind frame. But I'm really excited about my own books coming out because they say, how do you heal by doing astrology? And that's really what I do as a practitioner. So it's been kind of a dance to get the books out to honor the history of where we're coming from. But now I'm writing down my own ideas. So that's really cathartic.
And in his compact of a nutshell as you can present, what is your healing theory of astrology?
Well, it's more that, first of all, we need to discuss as astrologers how to do no harm. If we're going to be talking about the future, we need to make sure we're doing supportive futuring, that mm-hmm. we're not, you know, putting narratives into people's minds that might create a less optimal future. So that's kind of what I started with. There's a chapter on radical astral freedom, basically saying we need to assume that we have the utmost of control, just as a assumption. And then it goes from there to build a kind of, I'm trying to teach readers how to think about remediation. It's not lists. It's not a cookbook kind of thing. It's saying a lot of it's symbolic substitution. Or let's say there's some really hairy thing in the chart. You might want to composite into, you know, an easier vibration. It's almost like you make a molecule out of two atoms. Just so there's a lot of chapters on actual technical apparatus, but also theoretical stuff. It's 340 pages long. Mm-hmm. It's almost done.
And the first one coming out is going to be called what?
It's called Astrological Remediation, A Guide for the Modern Practitioner.
Got it.
And then the other one is called A Wonder Book of True Astrological Case Files. And that's I co-wrote with a woman named Judith Hill. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. But she wrote a book called The Astrological Body Types and Medical Astrology. She's a phenomenal astrologer.
But, right. Okay, and what's your website?
It's moirapress.org. That's M as in Mary,
O-I-R-A, moirapress.org,
yes.
moirapress.org.
Do you know what Moira means?
No.
In Greek? It's a word for fate, but it's the kind of fate, well, it's also the word for degree. So when you look at a person's chart, right, you have, you know, the sun at a certain degree and everything, and those are your fates, the kind of Moira you got, your lot. So.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, well, we've been speaking with Andrea Gerz, a Greek translator, sign language interpreter, and astrology author.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, been a pleasure having you on. You're listening to Planet Waves FM. My name's Eric Francis, continuing with our ongoing coverage of the United Astrology Conference. Today is May 26, 2012, when we're ending this interview at about 3:28 p.m. Catch you in a little while.